and we're holding on the top line of Ayin Amar Aleph. We're in the middle of the Mishnah told us that 10 categories of Yuchsin came from Bavel Teretz Yisroel with Ezra, and we were going through how we know from the Psukim that each of them were there. We went through Kohenim, Levim, Yisraelim, and we went through Chalalim with that whole discussion about the three families that couldn't prove the validity of their claims to be Kohenim. So now the Gemara continues, Geirim v'Charurim in Olan. How do we know there were Geirim and Avodim v'Shechrorim there? Amar Rav Chista, the Amar Kro, because the Pasuk describes in Sefer Ezra that it describes how they celebrated Pesach after they arrived. Anybody who had separated themselves from the Tumah of the nations of the land to come to them, which therefore includes Gerim, who had previously been worshipping Avodah Zarah and now became Gerim. It also includes Avodim Mishachrorim, same thing, because before they became Avodim, they had also been worshipping Avodah Zarah and now they're separated from that. So we see both of those groups were there. Next, Mamzeri Menolon, where do we know, continues the Gemara, that the next category in the Mishnah, there were Mamzerim there among the people who came up. And as we said yesterday, the point was that Ezra made a point of making sure that all the Psulim, including the Mamzerim, leave Bavel and come to Eretz Yisrael so that Bavel will be cleaned up as far as Yuchsin. Since again, as we said yesterday, as Rashi had brought, there are going to be fewer Chachamim there to be able to keep track of things. So Menolon, where do we see that there were Mamzerim? So like this, Tichtiv. So the Psukim describe in Nehemiah. Nehemiah had been, as we talked about yesterday, the king's cupbearer, his Saramashkin. He won permission from the king to go to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim and in general to shore up the Jewish community over there. And the Pasuk says, Vayishma Sanvalat Achoreini V'Tobia Ha'Eved Ha'Amoni. These two, Sanvalat from Choron, there's actually a Rashi there in Nehemiah further on in the Sefer that identifies him as a Yid who was a Rosha, although from our Gemara over here it seems Mashma that he was a Goy, whatever the case. So he was a fellow from Choron, from Beis Choron, by the name of Sanvalat. The Tovia Eved HaAmoni, another fellow named Tovia who was an Amoni slave, so he was a man from Amon. The Pashtos, it means he was a man from Amon who was a slave of some Yid. So he had the status of an Eved Kanani. Anyway, so they heard, and they, from then on, throughout Sefer Nehemiah, we find that they were Nehemiah's opponents. They tried to prevent him from rebuilding the walls of Yerushalayim. They harassed him. They tried to intimidate him, etc., etc. Anyway, and then afterwards, when Nehemiah is summarizing what happened during that period and how hard a time he had of it, he says that the problem was, it's not like all the other Jews realize that this Sanvalat and Tovia are bad news. On the contrary, Ki Rabin Yehuda Balish Shvu'aloi, many people in Yehuda would be sworn to him by an oath, meaning to Tovia particularly. Ki Chosin Hu L'Shchanya Ben Orach, because he was a son-in-law of Shchanya Ben Orach, who was an important Yid in those times. So in other words, he had this Shchanya, saw no problem with his daughter marrying this Tovia. And furthermore, Yehoichon and Bnoi Lokachas Bas Meshulam Ben Berechia, and Tovia's son, in turn, his had a son Yehoichonan, who married the daughter of Meshulam Ben Berechia, another prominent Yid. So the point is, in other words, that Tovia had family relationships and therefore alliances among the Jews over there, and that Nehemiah says over there that complicated things. He couldn't just say that Tovia is persona non grata, that he doesn't belong in the Jewish community, because he'd have people on his side. The point being, Kosovar, now we assume, for our purposes, this Tovia is, so we assume, Sanvalat is a Goy, so whether we're talking, whether the Pasuk, now the Pasuk doesn't make it clear which one of them, Sanvalat or Tovia, was the son-in-law of Shchanya and the father-in-law, and then the Mechotan of Meshulam ben Berechia. It could have been either Sanvalat or Tovia. Whatever the case, if it was Sanvalat, then we're assuming that he was a Goy. If it was Tovia, then he was an Eved. So therefore, Kosovar, so the Tana of our Mishnah evidently holds Eved Kechavim ve'Eved Habar Bas Yisrael Avlad Mamzer, that if a Goy or an Eved has relations with a Bas Yisrael, the child will be a Mamzer. So in other words, it would come out that Sanvalat's son, being also a Goy, is married to a Jewish woman, the daughter of Meshulam ben Berechia, and Sanvalat himself is married to a daughter of Shchanya ben Orach. So both of them, the children from both of those marriages, would be considered mamzerim. So therefore, so you have the mamzerim. However, the Gemara says, that works out according to the opinion that which we have in the Gemara in Yevamos that says that such a child is a mamzer. But according to the opinion, as we learned in the previous perek, that the child of such a marriage is kosher, he may be pogum, as we learned in the previous perek. If it's a daughter, she's not allowed to marry a kohen, but they are, other than that, a full-fledged yid. There's no impediment to them otherwise marrying Jews. Then what are you going to say? Where do you find anything in Psukim implying that there were mamzerim there? The two, and not only that, how do we know he had sons? Maybe he didn't have any children. In particular, it says that Yehoshanan married the daughter of Meshulam ben Berechia. That doesn't mean they had children. Rashi has a slightly different girsa. Who says that either Tovia or his son had children from these wives? Maybe this Yehoshanan, his son, is actually, in other words, from a different wife, from a Goyish wife. And so therefore there's no proof. So in other words, sure, we have a pasuk that says that either Sanballat or Tovia married the daughter of Shechaniah ben Arach, but maybe they didn't have any children. Similarly, maybe Tovia's son, Yehoshanan, maybe he didn't have any children with his Jewish wife either. And so therefore, again, you don't have any mamzerim over there. Third of all, who says that these families actually were here, meaning in Bavel, and then they went up to Eretz Yisrael? Maybe they had been in Eretz Yisrael all along. In particular, as we learned yesterday, you had the few Jews who remained in Eretz Yisrael after the Churban Bayis Rishon with Gedaliah ben Achikam. And even though afterwards, after Gedaliah was assassinated, most of them left for Mitzrayim, even though Yohanan Novi told them not to. Some of them may have stayed behind, or maybe some of them came back afterwards. So maybe the Sanballat and Tovia, or whichever one, and their families were living in Eretz Yisrael many years before Ezra. So where do we have any proof that they doubt came with Ezra? So for all those reasons, this is not a solid proof that there were mamzerim there at the time, or rather that there were mamzerim who came with Ezra and his group. So Ela Mehocha. So the Gemara says, rather, you can, interesting point over here, you know, if we're saying that this Tovia was an Eved Hamoni, and the Sanballat was a Goy, whatever it is, you're finding that they have names of Hashem in their names, Tovia itself, and Yehoshanan, so apparently to a certain extent they believed in Hashem, enough to name themselves and their children with such names, but not enough to actually be on the side of the Jews, but rather, I guess in modern terms, then you might call them almost self-hating Jews, except the Gemara is not saying over here that they were Jews, b'chlal. So Ela Mehocha. So rather, we can prove that there were mamzerim there from a different pasuk. When the pasuk lists in Sefer Ezra and repeats in Sefer and repeats in Nehemiah the list of the families and the number of each family who came to Eretz Yisrael, so after it lists the people from Yehuda, Binyamin, the Kohenim, Levim, etc. Then it says the Ela Ha'olam Mitel Melach Tel Chavsha. The following are the people who came up to Eretz Yisrael from Tel Melach and from Tel Chavsha. Kruv Adon V'Imer, and from the place is called Kruv Adon and Imer. So the Pashtus, some of them before explain that Kruv Adon V'Imer are actually names of families, but the Gemara apparently over here is understanding that they're names of cities that they came from, but we're going to douse in what they refer to. So, and the plus it continues, V'lo yochlo lahagid beis avoysim v'zaram im Yisrael heim. These people, the following families that it lists in the next pasuk, and we're not able to tell what their father's house is, meaning who their fathers are, or Vizaram, which therefore refer to their mother, in the Yisrael Haim, whether Bechlal they're Jews, or whether, so they're the Asufi that we mentioned in the Mishnah, where like they're descended from people who were found on the, from babies who were found in the street, and adopted, and you have no way of knowing whether they're Jews, and if they are, if they're kosher lineage or Mamzerim, or whether Bechlal they're Goyim. Marsha points out, now Rashi says that Beis Avoysim would mean they don't know who their fathers are, and the Zaram, therefore, would refer to their mothers. Marsha points out also when the pasuk says Im Yisrael Heim, the Gemara is also apparently darshaning the word Im as if it said Eim with a Tsere, which means they couldn't identify even whether their mothers are Jewish. So unlike the Shesuki that we had in our Mishnah, which now we're going to mention that we have proof from this pasuk that there were Mamzerim and Shesuki and Asufi all together, because we learned them all from this pasuk. So we're saying, unlike the Shesuki, who at least knows who his mother is, so he knows he's Jewish because his mother is Jewish, he just doesn't know whether he's legitimate or whether he's a Mamzer. In the case of the Asufi, they don't even know that because they don't even know whether their mother, they don't even know who their mother is. Anyway, so let's douse in the names. And the point is, why are we douse in the names? Because no place else in the list does it mention the places where these people came from. It mentions the family. This family had this number of people. The people who originally, whose ancestors were from that city in Eretz Yisrael numbered this many people. Nowhere else in the list does it mention the names of the places in Babel where they migrated from. So therefore, that leads the Gemara to douse in that those are telling us something about these people. So the first group, Tel Melach, when it says the mound of salt, and melach means salt, this refers to people who act in a way like the people of Sdoim, which eventually was turned into a pile of salt. So what do we mean? Rashi refers to the Gemara in Sanhedrin when it talks about the crooked laws of Sdoim. So you have the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, one of their crooked idea was, suppose that a man hits another man's wife while she's pregnant and causes her to miscarry. So, the logical, normal thing would be to say, you have to pay something, like the Torah says. Instead, in Sdoim, they came up with the notion, they tell the husband of the victim, you have to now let your wife stay by this guy and let him impregnate her again, so that way he'll make up for the babies that way. Now, of course, that's adultery, because she's still married to her husband, so therefore it comes out that in Sdoim they were committing adultery, where had they been Jews, these children would have been mamzerim, and therefore that tel melach therefore hints at people who were actual mamzerim. Marsha points out also, you have in the story with Loit and the Malachim in Sdoim, where they're saying, Hotzie Melenu Veneda Oisa, we want you to send out the men so we can have homosexual relations, but then that also shows that they were into Gilead Ayas. Anyway, the point is, Tel Melach therefore refers to such people. Tel Charsha, the next one in the pasuk, Tel Charsha, where Charsha comes from the word Cheresh, which means deaf or silent. Zesh Kore Abba v'imem Mishataktor. That refers to the Suki of our Mishnah, where he calls somebody father, he calls somebody Tati, and his mother tells him, "Be quiet, that's not your father." So that's the Suki of our Mishnah. So they're referred to in the Pasuk as having come from Tel Charsha. Then when the Pasuk continues, where they couldn't identify whether their fathers or mothers are Jewish, that refers to the Asufi who were gathered in from the street, where you found a baby abandoned in the street, and we have no way of knowing whether Bechlal is Jewish, and if he is, whether he's kosher or mamzer. So therefore, we have all three of those groups referred to in this Pasuk. Now, what about the next places in the pasuk where it continues, crew of Adon Ve'imer? What are we doushening from that? Means, so the Gemara is going to doushen, again, the Pashtus, these are the names of places they came from, or maybe the names of families, but here the Gemara is going to doushen it as a phrase. Means that by rearranging the words and doushening them. Omer Ababohu, Omer Adon. The word Adon is like the word Adon, meaning the master. Hashem, the master of the world, says, and Imer is Meloshin Omar that Hashem said. So Hashem is saying, I thought that I wanted that the Jewish people should be as important before me as a Kruv, meaning the Kruvim, meaning the Chayes HaKodesh, one of whose faces is the face of a Kruv. Marashas has another point as well, that you also, we find the famous Gemara in Yoma that says that the Kruvim, when the Jewish people are oisin ritzon shomokim, that when the Jewish people are doing what Hashem wants, then they would be facing each other and hugging one another. So therefore, Hashem is expecting that relations between men and women among the Jews should be like that on a high, holy level. Not that people are going to be committing znus of various kinds. Vehem somu atzmam kinomer. Instead, they made themselves like a leopard. A leopard is a very promiscuous animal. It doesn't care that a particular female has mated with a particular male. Another male will go and mate with her and not care. The same way, Hashem is very disappointed with the fact that the Jewish people are committing adultery and so forth, and having mamzerim and shsuki among them, and asufi among them, where they should have been on the high level of the crew. Where do you get the word? In fact, when we say in Pirkei Avos, when we say Heve Az Kanomer, one idea is we find elsewhere that Azus is associated with Mamzerim, and therefore, so now there's obviously there in the Mishnah, it's talking about a positive kind of Azus that you should have. But on the other hand, we're saying that the Nomer, the leopard, also has this negative trait of Azus, which comes from the fact that that so to speak, its children are mamzerim because it's very promiscuous with whom it mates. So Hashem is saying now the Jewish people have sunk to that level. Where are we getting particularly a leopard from? No, the Pasuk doesn't say any such thing. Marashah says maybe what the Gemara is doing is you're taking the word Adoin, the nun of Adoin, and putting it together with the word Emer, and therefore you end up with the word Nomer or something close to it. In fact, we have this list is mentioned, you have twice. We have once in Sefer Ezra, and again, the whole list is repeated with a few variations in Nehemiah. So in Nehemiah, actually, it says without a vav before the word Emer. So you have Kruv Adon Nimer, and therefore that allows us to darshan that we're saying that Hashem is disappointed that the Jewish people have sunk to the level of the leper. Ikadamri, but then there's another version that puts a more positive face on it. Omar Ababohu, that Ababohu darshans the words differently. Omar Odin, Hashem is saying, Afa Pisha Samu Atzmam Kenomer, even though the Jewish people have lowered themselves to the level of a leopard who is promiscuous, nevertheless, Hen Chashuvin Lefonek Kruv, nevertheless, the Jewish people are as precious before me as a Kruv, because after all, they have the ability to become great, after all, to do tshuva, as we find afterwards in Ezra and Nehemiah's times, where they did and got rid of these wives that they're not supposed to have. B'chlau, you also have, the Radal points out, you have Mamzer Tamad Chochem, Podim Bakoin Godal Amo Oretz. So Hashem is saying the Mamzer may be the result of a mating that's like the Nomer, but nevertheless, he has the ability to be as important as a Kruv by becoming a Tamad Chochem. Continues the Gemara, darshining this pasuk in another way. Omer Rav Baba Chana, Kolam Noise Isha She'ena Hegenes Loi. When a man marries a woman who's not suitable for him. Now, there's a few different ways of understanding what we mean by not suitable. We can mean where Rashi understands it to mean that she's posel to him. So, for example, a mamzeres. And then there's different other explanations. That the different, so in fact, the Pnei Yeshua says we don't necessarily mean literally that she's posel, because then based in here the Gemara is going to be talking about what happens to him, Milamila, how Hashem punishes him. If he's marrying a woman who's actually outright posel to him, it's not just up to Hashem to punish him, the based in down here on earth has to deal with it. So rather, he says it means that there's a suffix, he didn't bother checking, and there may be psulim in her lineage. There are other explanations. The Rosh says that we are literally talking about a woman who's possible over Bakal for a mamzeres, such as a mamzeres. And then there's another possibility that we don't mean that the Bakal is any psulim who yichus, but rather she's not suitable for him in the sense, for example, that she's the daughter of an Amoretz, where the Gemara tells us elsewhere that a man shouldn't marry the daughter of an Amoretz, because then if he's not available to help raise his children, if he dies or is forced to leave the country or whatever, then his children are going to end up being Amoretz. So according to that, the Isha She'ena Hegenes Loi could refer to that. Anyway, a man marries a woman like that, Hashem considers it as if he plowed up the whole world and planted it with salt. Again, we're looking at that pasuk from Ezra and Nehemiah, and here we're saying a person plows. So a person who does that, whereas the pasuk goes on to say the children don't know who their parents are and they don't know what their yichus is. So therefore, so it's as if he plowed up the whole world and planted it with salt. Where the point is, Marashah says, what happens if you scatter salt on farmland? Not only you're not going to grow anything, but you're going to damage the farmland for the future. And the same way, a person does this, he marries an unsuitable woman like this, however we define unsuitable, then it causes that his descendants in future generations are also possible. So it's like as if he's ruining the crops for future times as well. And the Gemara continues, when a man marries a woman for the sake of money, and again, what we mean is a woman who's possible or otherwise unsuitable for him, where she is suitable, where she's a miyucheses, and there's no problem, la halacha, with the marriage, and he's only marrying her for her money. It's not the right thing to do, but the poskim say that's not what the Gemara is talking about over here. We're talking about where he marries a woman who is otherwise unsuitable for him. For example, one who's actually possible, a mamzeres or a suffolk mamzeres or whatever, but he does that because she has money. having like bonim she'enim mehuganim. First of all, he's going to have children who are not erlich yidim. So not only, of course, if the mother is posel, the children are going to be posel lahalacha. They're going to be mamzerim or what have you, or mamzerim or shukim or whatever. But also, they're not going to be good as far as their midas. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Vashem bagadu. The Navi says they've betrayed Hashem. They've been disloyal to Hashem. Ki bonim zorim yoladu, because they gave birth to alien children. So what does that mean? This is so we're talking about, in other words, they're alien in the sense that they don't belong among the Jewish people, because there shouldn't be such children, mamzerim or shukim or whatever, among the Jewish people. And these people are marrying such wives and causing that to happen. And as the pasuk continues, we're talking about where there's money involved, as the Gemara says. So v'shem atoma momen polat. So you're going to think at least the money will survive. Fine. A person might say, my kids may be no goodniks, and they may not be able to freely marry into the Jewish people, but at least the money that I married her for is still going to remain intact. No, Talmud Lomar. The pasuk continues, after Yochlim Chodesh Eschokehem, now the month will eat up their portion. In other words, over time, the money, the Chokehem, their portion, the money for which he married her in the first place, is going to disappear. It's all going to be eaten up. It's all going to be destroyed in 1 month. So the person might think, okay, my portion might be lost, but not hers. So Rashi says, for example, the nichset son barzel that she brings into the marriage, where the husband, as we learned in Yevamos, assumes full rights over those, and he only has to reimburse her later for them if he dies or if he divorces before her or if he divorces her. So that may be lost, because after all, he's going to think he's the one who did wrong, but the nichset malug is not going to be, because after all, what did she do wrong? She wanted to marry somebody who has greater yichus than her. So note, Talmud by Machal Kehem. Therefore, the pasuk says their portions in the plural will be lost, meaning, in other words, that all the money is going to be gone as a result of this aver. V'shem atomel is man merubah. So you're going to think, okay, it's a long-term thing. So meanwhile, we'll enjoy it while we have it. Fine, and in a later time, it'll be lost. Note, Talmud by Machoydish. Therefore, the pasuk says a month. My mashma, what does exactly a month mean? Amr of Nachmitzchok, that's what it means. Chodesh nichnas, the chodesh yotza means a month goes in and a month goes out. Within 1 month, umamoinim avad, then all the money is lost. And Hashem causes that to happen because, to begin with, the man married improperly for this purpose in order to gain money. So therefore, Hashem makes it that within a month, all that money is gone. Pnei Yeshua also talks about the idea is, you know, you go outside, you look at the moon during the first half of the month. It's waxing and getting bigger and bigger. So the same way, this person may think, look at that, you know, I joined my fortune together with my mechotanim's fortune. And therefore, surely we'll have something greater and greater, like the moon becomes greater and greater. Then all of a sudden you have, starting from the middle of the month, it starts shrinking until it disappears. And so it's going to be with this month. Continues the Gemara. Rabba Barab Ada says another thing in connection with marrying women with marriages that are not supposed to happen. Others say that Absala said in the name of Ramanuna, a man marries a woman who is unsuitable for him. Again, however we define unsuitable, whether it means she's outright posel, whether it means that there's a suffix, whether she's posel, whether it means just that it's not fitting for him to be marrying her because she's the daughter of an Amoretz, and therefore that's going to have an effect on the chinuch of his children in the next generation. Whatever the case, however you define it, Eliyahu kofsei v'akadosh baruch hu roitzei. Eliyahu binds him to a post, like the way you do when somebody is chayav malchus, and Hashem whips him. Now Rashi explains roitzei malkehu beretzua, that Hashem whips him with a whip, and we're talking about beruchnius, of course. Interestingly, the kli yoker on the word roitzoi can also be related to the word marseya, like what you have, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, about the Eved Ivri getting his ears pierced. And in fact, the kli yoker says that's exactly what the Gemara means over here. That look, you have an Eved, an Eved Ivri is allowed to be married temporarily to a Shivcha Knanis during the time of his Avdus. Now he comes and says, Ahavdias Adonias Ishti Ves Bonai, I love my Shivcha Knanis wife and my children from her, and I don't want to leave him. So in other words, he's missing the opportunity to get rid of this gnai, of this shameful thing that it should be for a yid to be with a shivcha knanis and go free. So therefore, his ear is pierced. So in the same way over here, our Gemara is saying that Hashem pierces his ear for doing the same kind of thing, for saying, I'm married to this unsuitable wife and I don't want to separate from her. So therefore, he deserves that punishment.
What does Hashem need the Eliyahu to hold him tied down? Hashem needs Eliyahu to tie him down.
Right. It's putting it dibrator to Koloshim Bnei Adam, that when a person is brought to Beis Din from Malkus, that's how they do it. They tie him to part of the humiliation of Malkus, is that he's tied to a post. So the same way over here, Eliyahu is involved. Incidentally, by the way, there's a marginal note in Rashi over here. There's a parenthetical note added in Rashi that says Eliyahu here doesn't necessarily mean Eliyahu Anavi. Because then you'd have to ask, so what happened before Elio came along who did this? Rather, Rashi says that it's the name of a Malach, who's the scribe, Lamaila, so like Kavyachol, his job is to write down people's mitzvahs and Averis, so therefore he's also the one, he's like the Shliach Beis Din, who's responsible for tying the person to the post. With that said, there are a number of Mefarshim that learn that we do mean Eliyahu over here, Eliyahu Anavi, and they explain in various ways that Eliyahu particularly, we find that he's a big kanoi for this kind of thing. We find with the whole thing with Zimri and Cosby where he stood up because of it. Also, we're going to learn later on in the Gemara that Eliyahu is going to be the one who fixes up everyone. Mashiach comes, he's going to be the one looking over everybody's yichus and figuring out who's miyuchosim and who's not. So now when somebody makes it that his descendants are not going to be miyuchosim, then Eliyahu takes particular offense at it. So there are various reasons why it would in fact mean Eliyahu Anavi. Continues the Gemara. The Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Al Kulam, in all of these cases, Eliyahu Kosev Akash Bohu Chosim, Eliyahu writes down and Hashem signs, so to speak, a document, Lamaila, that says, Oloi Lapoiselas Zare, woe to this person who passels his descendants, or Lapoigamus Mishpachtoi, and who blemishes his family, because from now on there's a blemish in his family, and people who are careful of these things should be careful not to marry into that family, or Lamnoisi Ishisha, and Hagenis Loi, and when he marries a woman who's unsuitable for him, and they add, Eliyahu Kofsev, our Kodesh Baruch Hu wrote, say that Eliyahu ties him up and Hashem whips him, or Hashem pierces his ear. Hagoyes HaGura takes that out, actually, because apparently he understands, and in fact, in Ein Yaakov, it doesn't have it, because apparently, before we were talking about his actual punishment, here we're talking about the verdict that's written on him in Shemayim, so therefore it doesn't have to necessarily add that detail. What do we mean by Al Kulam? What do we mean in all these cases? Rashi says it means whether it's a Kohen or a Levi or a Yisrael that does this. Whichever one it is, Hashem writes down that the Ochen Veit is such a person who did that. The Marshal explains that the three are, it means whether he marries an Isha, whether he marries a woman who's outright Psula, for example, a Mamzeres, or whether she's Pogum, it's not that she's actually Posel, but there's a Pagam in her lineage and he marries her anyway, or whether he marries a woman who doesn't have such Yichus as his own, where there's maybe not a Gam per se, but like you don't really know what her yichus is. So then he says the three categories in our Gemara. That's why he has three expressions. Oilo the poisel asari, when he actually marries a woman who's also to him, for example, a mamzeres, he actually passels his children. When he marries an ishak guma, then the expression is poigamas mishpachtoi. He causes a flaw in his lineage. It's not an outright issue, but there's a flaw in it. It's not as clean as it should be. And when he marries a woman who's unsuitable, then no se ishashen hagenis. That's how Marshal learns. Marisha says another possibility that al kulam means it does mean one particular marriage, but it means that one particular marriage has three effects. Number one, he passels his children, and the Gemara is going to explain later that the Shechina rests only on the families of Jewish people that have yichus, that he's taking his children out of that. Number two, he's blemishing his family, that now you have people in future generations are not going to be willing to intermarry with this family because they know there's a psul in it. And the third one is that, and the third one is that he was over an Avera to marry such a woman in the first place. So it all gets written down in Shemayim and signed in the sense, Marashah says, that the Avera, such an Avera, the effects of it can never really be undone because after all, the children who are born from it, They continue to exist in the world. The Gemara, in fact, tells us in Chagiga that an example of Mu'uvas lo yuchal lisko, and what do you have? That a person has made something crooked and he can't straighten it out. One example of that is where he marries a woman who's underwear, where he has relations with an erva, and they have a mamzer, because then the mamzer exists in the world, as the Alter Rebbe puts it in Tanya. It's already the klippa has been vested in a goof, a boss of a dam, and therefore it's very hard to undo the effect of it. Yeah, the rare example, you have that famous story involving the Baal Tshuva that in the times of the Mittel Rebbe, for whom the Mittel Rebbe wrote one of his svarim to give him a path to Tshuva, where he had a goyish wife and children and they ended up drowning, but b'derech klal that doesn't happen. Anyway, continues the Gemara, v'chol ha'poisel posel. Whenever you have somebody who himself is poisel, he always goes and claims about other people that they're posel, that they're mamzerim, or whatever. You should know posel, then he himself is the actual posel one. He never speaks favorably of anybody. So Rashi explains that's referring to the posel. When you have a posel person, a mamzer or whatever, is the type to never speak favorably about other people. Agrah changes the gears slightly. He says, "Ve'enim adabav shvachay shel olam." He never speaks favorably about anything in the world. Marshall says that actually it refers back to the poisel. When somebody habitually is poisel people and never speaks positively about them, when you have a person, in other words, who Marshall learns what the Gemara is saying is when you have a person who he does cast aspersions on other people. He says they're mamzerim or whatever, but he also sometimes speaks positively of people. That doesn't necessarily mean that he himself is a mamzer. But when the only thing he talks about other people is always to put them down, then you have good reason to think that he himself is apostle, as in the story that now the Gemara is going to tell. So the Gemara tells, "Hahu gavra de minahouda." There was a man from Nahouda in Babel. De ol lebei mitbachaya for Pumbedissa. He one time went into a butcher shop in Pumbedissa. So he was visiting Pumbedissa for whatever reason, and he went into a butcher shop. Amalahu hawuli bisra. He says, "Give me some meat." Amrulei. So they told him, "Notar, wait. Ad the shokel shmaya to Rav Yehuda bar Yechezkel until Rav Yehuda bar Yechezkel's attendant, his mishores, takes his meat." Rav Yehuda was the Rosh Yeshiva there in Pumbedissa. The nasiv loch, and then afterwards we'll serve you. Omar, so this guy says, "Man Yehuda bar Shviskal to kodim li." Who is this Yehuda bar Shviskal who's going ahead of me, the shokom and kamoi, and getting before me? So he's putting down Rav Yehuda and calling him by a derogatory nickname. What does Shviskal mean? So Rashi says that the word Shviski we find in other places in the Gemara means roasted meat. So therefore, it's like he's calling Rav Yehuda, the great Amora, the great Rosh Hashiva, he's calling him a glutton. Like all he does is eat lots of roast meat, and therefore he's taking the name Yechezkel and twisting it into Shviskal, the glutton who always eats roasted meat. Marsha says a different explanation. The word Shviskal can be broken down into Shavi Sokal, which means he's equivalent to the one who's stoned. Now we have the Ben Sora Ramoda. What brings him to what brands him as a Ben Sora Ramoda and eventually gets him executed if he keeps up is that he eats meat and drinks wine in a gluttonous way. So this guy is comparing Rav Yehuda, whose shamash is here in the butcher shop buying meat. He's comparing Rav Yehuda to the Ben Sora Ramoda, like he's a glutton and he's going to suffer the same end, or deserves to suffer the same end. What is a terribly chutzpahdika thing to say? Ozlu Omrulela Rav Yehuda. So people went and told Rav Yehuda what happened. How it's not over on Lashon Hara. There's a few different explanations. One of them being that specifically the one who told him is the actual Meshores himself. And we find the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan that when, for example, a Rav sends his shamash or whoever it is to go and call somebody to a din Torah and the guy refuses and then mocks the shliach or whatever, then the shliach is entitled to go back and tell the Rav and it's not considered Lashon Hara. So basically, because it's L'Teyelis, it's for a constructive purpose to get the problem taken care of. So according to that, that would have been the same thing over here. Shamte and Rav Yehuda put him in Cherem. Now, one reason Rav Yehuda might have put him in Cherem is because of the insult to his own covered, which the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan that a Talmid Chacham is allowed to do that. And in fact, Rashi says just that over here. Rashi says on the word Shamte, Rashi says just that. Kedashkachon, just as we find him in Nadim the Kvoda Rab, the Moed Cotton. We find in Moed Cotton that you're allowed to be put somebody in Nidui for transgressing the covet of a Rav, which was the case over here where he calls Rav Yehuda a derogatory nickname. Further on in the story, actually, Rav Yehuda himself explains himself and says that he did it because the guy harassed the shliach of the Chachamim, which could be. Rav Yehuda didn't want to take the credit and say it was because of my kavod. So therefore, he's saying the fact is that this is a shliach based in that he insulted. Then people also told Rav Yehuda, Rogel d'kori le'inshi avi. Dekori Inshi Avdi. This fellow from Nahuda regularly calls people Avodim. So he's claiming that they're possible to marry into the Jewish people. So Achuzaleh, the Avdahu, son of Yehuda, made an announcement in the city of Pumbedissa that this guy himself is an Evan, in accordance with what we said, Bechola Poisel Possel. So now, this guy wasn't going to take that laying down. Ozalahu, that fellow went, Asmir in the din lekameder of Nachman. He went and summoned Rav Yehuda to a din Torah in front of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was the Rosh Hashiva in Nahuda, which is where this guy was from. So he went to his local Beis Din in Nahuda and had them issue a summons to Rav Yehuda to come from Pumbedissa for a din Torah to defend himself against this guy. So sure enough, this guy actually goes and brings the letter of summons to Rav Yehuda. Also, Rav Yehuda lekameid Rav Huna. So Rav Yehuda went to consult with Rav Huna. V'omalei asked him, Ezel oylei Ezel, should I go? Rav Nachman has summoned me to a din Torah. Rav Nachman, it seems from various gemaras, he was a chaver of theirs of Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna, but on the other hand, he's younger, maybe it's beneath Rabbi Yehuda's covered to go to a din Torah over there. So he asks him, should I go or not? Omalei, so Rabbi Huna tells him, Mezel loy mi boi locha mezel. Really, you shouldn't need to. Mishum de gabra rabba at. You're a great Talmud Chacham. You're a Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedissa. And that puts you higher than Rabbi Nachman, who's the Rosh Hashiva in Nahuda. Pumbedissa was one of the two main yeshivas in Babel. You had Surah and Pumbedissa, which is why Rav Yehuda is going to Rav Huna, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Surah, to consult with him. Nahuda, meanwhile, Rav Nachman has a great Talmud Chacham, I'm sure, but his yeshiva that he has in Nahuda is not of the caliber of the yeshivas of Surah and Pumbedissa. So really, by rights, you shouldn't have to go to a din Torah for him. Elam shum yekara de benasiya, but because considering the honor of the house of the Nasi, meaning the Reish Galusa, where Rav Nachman was married to the daughter of the Reish Galusa, so because of that, kumzil, because of that, you should go and follow the summons and go to the din Torah. The Reish Galusa was the governor of the Jews in Babel. He had a fair amount of political power, but more to the point, in other words, it was a covered for Malchus Beis David. The Reish Galusa is descended Ben Achaben from David HaMelech. And the Jews in Babel gave the Reish Galusa tremendous honor, and therefore Rav Huna says, for that reason alone, because Rav Nachman is a son-in-law, therefore it would be infringing on his honor to not go. So even though you're a Rosh Hashiva and you shouldn't have to, go anyway. So Rav Yehuda traveled to Nahuda. Ashkechei deka'ovid maike. He came to Rav Nachman's house and saw that Rav Nachman was building a maike, a fence around his roof, like the Torah tells us you have to have.
So it's in his house,
which in his house, it was basement. Doesn't really matter. Whatever. Omalei, the Pashtus, he came to Rav Nachman's house first. I don't know. Could very well be the basement was run out of Rav Nachman's house, for all we know. I don't know. Anyway, Omalei. So Rabbi Yehuda says to him, Don't you agree with what Rav Huna Bar Idi said in the name of Shmuel? Once a person has been appointed a leader, a rav or a rosh yeshiva over the tzibur, he's also to do malacha in front of three people. Rashi says it would be a gnai, it would be a terrible embarrassment for the generation that they're subjected to, that they're under the authority of somebody who doesn't even have somebody to do work on his behalf. And then the Rambam phrases it a little differently, that the work itself is to a certain degree a gnai for a Talmud Chacham. Now, we do, for one second, We do find quite a few Chachamim who worked for a living. For example, we have Rabbi Yeshua who worked with making needles and then with coal and charcoal and whatever. We find many different Chachamim who worked for a living. So yeah, whatever. So one explanation is it's true, Taka. If he's doing it because he has to earn a living, then yeah, that's better. The Rambam in particular talks about that a person should not be taking money for learning Torah. And therefore he has no choice but to work for a living. But here, what Rav Nachman is doing is not working for a living, so therefore Rav Yehuda tells him you shouldn't be doing it. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, what's the problem? Put de gunderisa hu de ka'avidna. All I'm doing is I'm making a little bit of a gunderisa, which is a fancy Aramaic word for a fence. So what he's saying, I'm doing it for a mitzvah, so what's the problem? Amalei, but Rabbi Yehuda says, why are you using this fancy expression gunderisa? Mi sanya maike dechtib ba uraisa im chitza da amar abaran. Is there anything wrong with using the word maike like it does in the pasuk, or the word mechitza, which is the usual word like a chachamim are using? Why are you using this high flown language gunderisa, which is not the usual way of saying it? So Rav Nachman says to Rav Yehuda, yes, and we're going to see further on in the Gemara, by the way, Rav Nachman had forgotten that he had summoned Rav Yehuda to a din Torah in the first place. He thought Rav Yehuda is Sam coming for a visit. So he invites Rav Yehuda, come sit down on Karpita, which means a bench. And again, Omele Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda, and so Rav Yehuda is going to basically go over and over and show Rav Nachman, there's no reason why you should be talking that way. Like he wants to sort of put Rav Nachman in his place. You're going to summon me to a din Torah. You should be aware you're not so great as you think you are. So he says, so why are you using the word karpita? What's wrong with the word sapsol, which is the chachamim's term for such a thing, or itztiva, which is the common term for it? Why on the side of it here has the other way around, and Yaakov has the other way around? Itztiva is the chachamim's word for it, sapsol is the common word. Whatever the case, where are you getting this fancy karpita from? So then he says to Rav Yehuda, please eat an esrog, but instead of calling it an esrog, he calls it esroinga with a nun in the middle. Amalei, so Rav Yehuda tells him, Hoch Yama Shmuel, you should know that Shmuel said, Kola Oima Esroinga, anybody who speaks like that and puts the nun there, Tilta Baromus Rucha. He has one third of gaiva. He's showing one third of a degree of gaiva in that he's trying to use like fancier language like that. What do we mean by one third? Marashah says one way of understanding it is that there's two common ways you could say it. It's going to say the Lashon of the Chachamim and the Lashon of regular people. You're choosing a third way, so that shows you have a degree of gaiva. Second of all, he says you have this gaiva in Machshava, in Dibur, and Maisa. You're doing gaiva and Dibur, so that's one third of what of gaiva. Anyway, you should know, he says, Rabbi Yehuda, Shmuel had said, Oy esrog kid kayur rabbanon. Either you should call it an esrog, which is the Chachamim's term for it. Oy esroiga the Amri inchi, or call it an esroiga, which is the Aramaic equivalent of that word, and that's the common word that people use. Omele. So then Rav Nachman offers him lishti mar anavga. Where Rebbe, would you drink an anavga, which is a cup containing a revius? Rashi refers to a Gemara in Brachas that says that specifically the anavga is a cup of a type of drink called espargos, where they take wine and they soak cabbage in it, and it's like a medicinal drink that they would drink in the morning. So he's offering Rabbi Yehuda a drink of a revius of that. And again, Omele, Rabbi Yehuda says, what kind of a word is that? Anavga. Mi soni espargos to kayur rabbanon anpek de amri inchi. What's wrong with the word espargos, which is the Chachamim's term for it, or anpek as people call it?
He's not answering, he's just asking you.
He says, right, each time, he's instead, right, each time he's saying that why you're using such high-flown language, yeah. Rav Levi Yitzchak, that his father, has an interesting explanation of this piece of the Gemara over here, particularly why it is that what's wrong with the word esroingo with the nun, and why Rav Nachman offered him four different things, and why the first time you have, he mentions the Lashon Torah, but he doesn't mention it by the other ones, and he explains, Api Kabbalah, the four things that Rav Nachman offered him refer to the four olamos. So first, there's a mechitza, as in the separation between Aksilos and Biyah. Then you have the offering him to sit on a bench is the equivalent of Bria, offering him food is Yetzirah, and he explains how each one of them refers to that Olam, and offering him the drink corresponds to Asiya. And so therefore, since Atzilus is closer to Elikos, therefore there you have Lashon Torah versus Lashon Chachamim, whereas in all the other ones, those being lower worlds, then you only have Lashon Chachamim versus the Lashon of common people. And he explains the idea, among other things, an Esrog is supposed to represent the opposite of Gaiva. Esrog stands for Alter Eini Rego Gaiva. So when you put in the Nun over there, so if you say Esrog or Esroga, you're keeping the whole Rosh HaTevis together of Alter Eini Rego Gaiva. But when you stick a Nun in there, then you're not. Then you're breaking up the Rosh HaTevis, and therefore Adarabba, then it represents Gaiva, which is what Shmuel meant over here, that there's a degree of Gaiva in speaking that way. Anyway, continues Rav Nachman. Omele tesi doinag tashkinan. Let doinag, who Rashi says is my daughter, let her come and give us drinks. Now, according to Rashi, it comes out that Rav Nachman is making this offer to Rav Yehuda. Would you like my daughter to come and serve us drinks? According to Marsha, this is actually Rav Nachman responding and defending himself about the last one, at least. He's saying, you know why I use the word anavga? And you're saying, what's wrong with calling it asparagus or anpak? Because I want my daughter to hear and come out and serve us the drinks, and she's more familiar with that terminology because we in the family of the Reish Galusa use that kind of terminology. So therefore, so I had no choice but to use that word. Anyway, Omale, but Rabbi Yehuda says, Hachi Omar Shmuel, Ein Meshtam Shem Be'isha. You're not allowed to have a woman serve you. So Rabbi Nachman says, what's the problem? Tani, she's a child. Whether she's an adult or whether she's a child. Now, that is brought lahalacha, but in particular, though, it's brought, the Rambam brings, and I think this is accepted lahalacha, primarily we're talking about the kind of more intimate, services, for example, pouring him a cup, which, if you find, for example, by a husband and wife, that they're not allowed to pour a cup for each other while she's near her. So in the same way over here, to have her pour and mix a cup of anavga over here would be a problem. We're not talking about stam, for example, like sweeping around the house or something. Anyway, so then Rav Nachman asks him, Nishda loymar shlomo leYalta, would you like to send greetings to Yalta, who was Rav Nachman's wife? Omalei, so Rav Yehuda says, Hachi amashmo kol beisha erva. A woman's voice is erva. Now, primarily, that talks about when a woman's singing voice. Here, Bapashtis would be talking about that she'd be speaking. However, there's a few different explanations. One of them being that maybe an Odom Choshev, like Rabbi Yehuda, needs to go the extra mile. And another explanation, he says, was in those times, when you ask a woman for Shalom, she would answer in a singing voice, and that would be the minig, and therefore, that would be a problem. Anyway, so Rav Nachman says, okay, Efshai de Shliach. Fine, don't ask her directly. Send the She'elas Shalom through a messenger. Omalei, Rabbi Yehuda says, Hachi Omar Shmuel, Ein Mesholem B'Shlem Isha, Afilo Aydei Bayil. Ein Mesholem B'Shlem Isha. You're not allowed to ask after a woman's Shalom, because that can cause an inappropriate closeness between them. Even to a Shliach. So Rav Nachman says, Aydei Bayil. So if I can do it through her husband, I'm going to be giving her the Shalom. Rav Yehuda says, Hachi Omar Shmuel, Ein Shalom B'Shlem Isha Klal. You're not allowed to ask the Shalom of a woman at all, because it causes her then to have two warm feelings for the man. Now, Tosfos brings, on the other hand, you have a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says the Malachim ask Ayei Sara Ishtecha, right, because they are asking Abraham how Sara is doing. So Tosfos explains there's a difference between She'elas Shalom versus L'Shloyach L'Shalom. She'elas Shalom means to ask how she's doing. That, the Gemara says, is a good thing for a guest to do. Here we're talking about to say Shalom Aleichem to her, even through a shliach, would be inappropriate. There was a good deal of discussion about it in later poskim. Nowadays, when there's less chiba and such things, maybe there's less of an issue. So the poskim talk about it still is, it's still where possible. It's good to be careful, but minhag ha'olam is that you do say, and they also talk about maybe it's only a problem when you use the word shalom, maybe other things like good morning or hello or whatever are not the same thing. So the ma'ase, you see that people are not necessarily nizer in that, but they do talk about that at least there should be a certain aspect of it, at least as far as saying shalom, or shalom aleichem, particularly that you should be careful.
Especially those days, people wondering to be hiding.
Most of the time the women were in the house. That's true also, yeah. Okay, so basically, sort of, Yehuda has been over and over showing Rav Nachman that he doesn't know certain things that he ought to know. So finally, Shochalej Vesu, finally, Rav Nachman's wife, Yalta, sent him a message, Shori Le Tigre, you know, better take care of his problem, of his issue, whatever it is that he's going to make you look like any Amaretz that you don't know anything, because everything you're saying, he's showing that he's showing you up. Omele, sort of Nachman says, my shiyoti de marhofa, what brings the Rebbe over here? Yehuda says, Taske de Hasman Ashodr Mara Basroi. You, Rebbe, sent a letter of summons to Beis Din to me. Omele, sort of Nachman says, Hashta Shusa de Mara Loi de Mirna. Look at this, I haven't even learned everything that you're talking, everything in our conversation you're showing over and over that I don't know what I'm talking about. Taske de Hasman Nusam Ashadan Alamar. Would I have sent a summons to Beis Din to you, Rebbe? And the point is that he had forgotten.
Over 40.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, Reb Nachman was busy, so you have to realize. I mean, here you know the Gemara is telling it all as one story. You have to imagine in real life, it probably took quite a while until the fellow went all the way from Odessa to Naudah to deliver the summons, and until Reb Yehuda checked with her Huna, months may have passed in between. Yeah. Anyway. So, Apik Diska de Hasmanusim Bechade, sort of, your Yehuda took out the letter of summons from his chest, meaning from his pocket, from his breast pocket or whatever. Well, Omele and Achzule, and he shows him Omele Ha Gavra Vahodiska. He was the man and he was the letter. He was the man, meaning he was the guy who summoned me to the Din Torah in the first place, and he was the letter he brought me. He had shown up sometime during this whole thing. So, after all, he lived in Nahudah. It's not hard for him to find, out that Rabbi Yehuda is in town. Amalei, sort of Nachman says, okay, well, since already you've come here, l'shtoy milei, so fine, speak and say what you want to say to justify yourself. This way people don't think the Chachamim are flattering one another, as if like to say people might start thinking, you know what, Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Yehuda both being Tamid Chachamim, sort of Nachman is favoring Rabbi Yehuda and saying, you don't even have to come for the Din Torah, we're just saying you're innocent and that's that. So speak and say what you have to say. And we have to understand that this person was there, because otherwise, Taka, you have an Isser for the Dayan to hear one side before the other side is there, so that alone shows the other guy must have been there.
I was asking you because you've been so nice to him that all that you can't do.
Right.
That's okay, but...
No, but that's the right. But here it's more, he's showing him favor as a Talmid Chacham. That kind of thing is allowed. You have, for example, the Gemara in Shavuos tells us, even though the Baal Din are supposed to stand in front of the Beis Din, but when there's a Talmid Chacham, when one of the Baal Din is a Talmid Chacham, for example, you're allowed to tell him to sit. And then if the other guy wants to sit also, Gesundheit. But so to that extent, it wouldn't have been a problem. But now, Rav Nachman is saying, if we don't actually judge the Din Torah, people are going to think that I just let you go with nothing. So we can't do that. So he asked him, "My time a shamte mal ahu gabra." So he asked him, "So why'd you put that fellow in chayim?" So Rav Yehuda answers, "Tzir shlichah de rabbanan, because he troubled the shliach of the chachamim by embarrassing him and trying to get ahead of him in line." So sort of Nachman asks, "Gnag de mar." So why don't you instead give him malchus? The Rav mangin amadim is amayin de matzar shluchah de rabbanan. As in fact we learned earlier in our Masechta that Rav would give people malchus for doing that, for harassing the shliach of the chachamim. So Rav Yehuda answers, "The odif mene abdulei. I did what's stronger for him." In other words, yes, I did the stronger thing to penalize him more. Now, how could he do that? One thing is, because of this, that we said that because he called Rabbi Yehuda such a chutzpahdika name, and because we went on to say, that he called people avodim, so therefore Rabbi Yehuda is saying, I was entitled to use my discretion and say that I'm entitled to give him a stronger punishment, because he acted with such tremendous chutzpah.
Isn't that something that hurts more than
it may hurt more, but to be in Chayrim, where nobody can have anything to do with him, is considered a stronger punishment. In fact, the Bach brings says there's a difference between if he's just mitzayer the shliach, he just harasses the shliach, versus he's mevazeh him. So he understands our Gemara. Rav Yehuda is saying not that I did what's stronger to him, but he did what's stronger. He did the more chutzpahdika thing, and therefore he deserves a bigger punishment. Okay. So Rav Nachman continues. Fine, I accept that. My time, Achli's Maralei de Avdavi. Why do you announce about this guy that he's an Eved? Amalei, so Rav Yehuda says, the Rogel, the Kori in Shiavi, because he regularly calls people Avadim. The Tony, and we learn in a Braisa, call a Poisel Possel, Vaini Medaba Shvachal Oilam, as we said on Amar Aleph, that a person who regularly passels other people himself as Possel, and the Possel, or the Poisel himself, however we learned before, never speaks praiseworthy about any other people, but Omar Shmuel, Bemumay Poisel. And Shmuel says specifically, you always find, call a Poisel, Bemumay Poisel, when a person says about other people that they have a soul, it's really himself who has the same exact soul. So therefore, if he's calling people avodim, it means that he's an Eved. Rav Nachman says, you know, Shmuel may be saying only you should be choishish that the person has that soul. Where did Shmuel ever say you openly go and make an announcement about him? That's definitely so. Meanwhile, this fellow had come from Nahdah. The gusa we have over here is that now this fellow showed up. On the other hand, the Maharshal takes that out because the pashtus we said before, the man was already there, and Reb Nachman wouldn't have been discussing the case with Reb Yehuda without this fellow already being there. So maybe he came at the beginning of the conversation, whatever. But the point is, he would have had to be there, right? So now this fellow, the Baal Din, says to Rav Yehuda, "Decorously Abda, you're calling me an Eved? Dastinim beis Chashmonoi Malka. I have Yichus. I come from the descendants of the Chashmonoi." Omalei, so Rav Yehuda says, Hachi Omer Shmuel, this is what Shmuel said. Called the Omer Midveis Chashmonoi Kasina Abdahu. Anybody who claims to be from the family of Chashmonoim is really descended from Avodim, because he's descended from Urdus, who wiped out the Chashmonoim. In fact, by the way, the Iyun Yaakov points out this is a perfect example of the idea that sometimes a person wants what he doesn't deserve and ends up losing even what he had. Why in the beginning of the story? What makes this guy think that he should be entitled to go ahead of Rabbi Yehuda's servant in getting the meat? Because he says, I'm a Koyin, and a Koyin goes ahead. He's mistaken, because even a Mamzer Tamen Chochem comes before a Koyin Gadol Am Haaretz. But in any case, now the result is you lost his claim to being a Koyin altogether. However, Rav Nachman says,
That's what's about the kingdom, the Chashmonaim, no?
What?
That's what's got to be a king, no?
No, what we're saying is that eventually the Chashmonaim were wiped out by Hurdus. Hurdus was an Eved from Edrin.
Right.
So therefore, anybody who claims in future generations to be from the Chashmonaim is really descended from Hurdus. Wait, we'll get back to that in a minute. Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, Lois Sovel Amar Lahod Amr of Abba Amr of Huna Amr Rab. Fine, but don't you, Rav Yehuda, agree with what Rav Abba Amr of Huna Amr Rab? Kol Tamad Chocham Shemorda Halacha Oba. When a Tamad Chocham comes and says a certain thing of Halacha, Im Koyde Maisa Amra, if he said it before the actual case that involves that Halacha comes along, Shomin Lo, then we listen to him and we accept what he's saying as Halacha. Vim Lab in Shomin Lo. If not, then we don't listen to what he says because maybe he might be saying it because of the Maisa. Now, it might mean that outright he might be lying, but before we say, we don't necessarily suspect the Tamad Chacham of lying, but at least, in other words, because he is Negev Adogar, therefore he might, for example, he might think that something is so logical, it's necessarily, it's so, and really, if he looked at it a little more objectively, then he would realize not so. So Rav Yehuda, Rav Nachman is saying, after this guy came and said that he's from the family of the Chashmonoim, you're saying what Shmuel said, that such a person is really an Eved. How can we accept that what you're saying is 100% valid? Maybe you're negeya b'davar. Maybe Shmuel said it slightly differently, and you're misunderstanding it because in the heat of the matter.
So you're saying the story after he said he's ever. That's
after. Yeah. Well, after this guy said I'm from Beis Chashmonoi.
Right.
Omalei, so Rabbi Yehuda says, fine. You should know Rav Masna agrees with me. He will also say independently that this is what Shmuel said. Now Rav Masna like Chazil and Ahadra tfloi so shni. Rav Masna had not been in Nahajah by that point for 13 years. But Rashga HaPratis, Hahu Yoyma Osa, that day he showed up in Nahajah. Omalei, so Rav Yehuda turns to him and he says, Dochir Mar Mai Omer Shmuel, do you remember, Rebbe, do you remember what Shmuel said? Ki koi chodakara aguda v'chodakara amabra, when he had one foot on the bank of the river, and the other one on the Mabra, Rashi says two possibilities. Mabra might be the bridge, or it might be the ferry. Whatever, Shmuel was about to cross a bridge or about to cross a ferry, and he told us something in Halacha. Do you remember what it was? Amalei. So Rav Nachman says, yes, Hochi Yom HaShmuel, called the Amim in Beis Hashmonoim Malka Kasina. Anybody who claims I'm descended from the royal family of the Hashmonoim, Abdahu, is really an Ebed. Dolei Shkayu Minayu Elah Yudavisa, because all that was left of the Hashmonoim after Hur just killed them all out was one girl, the Sokal Igra, where she went up to the roof, realizing, as the Gemara says over there, that Hur just had his eye on her. Umisa, and she jumped, Viramya Kola Vamra, and she lifted up her voice, she called out and said, Kol da Amr Beis Hashmonoi Ano Abdahu. Anybody from now on who says they're from Beis Hashmonoi is really an Ebed, because there's nobody left from the Hashmonoi except me, I'm the last one, and Nothel Me Igro Umisa, and she fell off the roof and died. So in other words, what happened was, Hudras falsely claimed that he had married into the family of the Hashmonoim, and therefore his children are descended from the Hashmonoi. And they may not have the status that are carrying him because they'd be descended in the female line, but still, at least that they'd have some kind of yichus. But in fact, it wasn't so. There's nobody left from the Hashmonoi for him to bechlal marry. Josephus, by the way, tells in his histories he does have Hurdus marrying a Hashmonoi woman and having children from her. But based on our Gemara over here, we see that he was taken in by Hurdus' propaganda. Anyway, so the truth is, anybody who claims that is really descended from Avadim. So sure enough, so that substantiated what Rabbi Hoda says. Achru zalei da avdahu. Sure enough, they made an announcement in the Haudah also that this guy is an Eved.
He
got what he asked for. Yeah. Hahu yomi ikaran hamak subosib in the Haudah. That day, quite a number of subos were ripped up in the Haudah because all of a sudden there were a number of families who discovered that they are actually descended from Avadim. Various other families over there who claimed that they're from Hashmonoim, and now it turned out they're Avadim. So therefore, so it turns out their marriages were invalid lahalacha in the first place.
Because they
thought they were kohenim and married to legitimate Jewish women. It turns out they're avodim, where an eved is not allowed to marry a Jewish woman.
Oh, wow.
So it turns, yeah. So when Rabbi Yehuda was leaving town, people followed Rabbi Yehuda and they were about to stone him. People were furious with him that now because of him. So there's so much trouble. He tells them, Ish siku shsiku, if you're going to be quiet, then good be quiet. And if not, maglina alaihu hodo ama Shmuel. I will reveal against you something else that Shmuel said. Tauti zarayosi ikav in Ahouda, where Shmuel says there were two families in Ahouda, chodem ikariya de be Yonah, chodem ikariya de be Eravdi. One is called the family of Yonah, the other is called the family of Eravdi, and one of them is kosher and one is posel. The simonach, the simon, to know which is which. Tomei, Toher, Toher. The one that bears the Tomei name, Oravdi, means a raven, are the Tomei ones. They're the ones who are apostle. The ones who bear the name Yonah, which is a kosher bird, are Toher. So he's threatening to expose that information also. Now, how does that help if he's saying the information right there? Marashah says that maybe this was added by Ravina and Rav Ashi. Maybe Rav Yehuda is only saying, I'm going to tell what Shmuel says about the two families in Nauda. He doesn't identify them by name. Ravina and Rav Ashi, when they compiled the Gemara, they added that detail. Another way of explaining it is, he does mention the names, but right now he's saying nobody knows who's from Eravdi and who's from Yonah. I'm going to reveal all that if you don't leave me alone. So, Shadu Alahu Rigma Miyadayu, so everybody dropped the stones they were about to stone him with, become Atma in Har Malka. There was a blockage in the Malka River, which flowed next to the city. In other words, there were so many people over there with so many rocks that when they dropped them all, it caused a temporary blockage in the river. Showing how much danger of Yehuda was in, except that he was able to get himself out of it. So now the Gemara is going to go on. We'll continue tomorrow. Beis Hashem, we'll talk about that. Rabbi Yehuda announced that there were more families that are apostle, and the Gemara is going to get into the whole matter of the kosher and the apostle of families among the Jewish people.
The only people now that got married had to break up the marriage.
So that was the process. Either there's two possibilities. Either they're actually considered avodim lahalacha, and therefore, yeah, their marriages are invalid to begin with, because that would mean the kids would be psulim, because the kids would be considered avodim, or maybe not avodim. We said before, Evan abar bas Yisrael avlam kosher, the halacha is the children of kosher, they're just pogrom. Or the other possibility is you could have some of these women could claim that the kedushin were under mistaken premises. We wouldn't have married you if we knew you were an eved. We thought you were miyuchas. We thought you were kohen miyuchas, and now it turns out not. And therefore, that would be valid reason maybe to annul the kedushin. So
the kids would be what?
So the kids would be again. They would be pogrom because their father is an eved. There wouldn't be mum. La halacha, we said before, you have an opinion. No, because the fact is, an Eved habar bas Yisrael, an Eved is not able to have relations, is not able to have a valid kedushin with a bas Yisrael. An Eved is b'chlal not b'tortus getting the kedushin. So we had before, the Gemara mentioned an opinion at the top of Ayin Amud Aleph that the children of Sipathing are mamzerim. The halacha is they're not mamzerim. they're just begumim. They have a flaw in their lineage, but still, they're not. They don't have the yichus that they thought they did. Wow.